This is a podcast from Minute Media.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
Hello, 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 and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast. Rich Hobbs here, and joining me on this January night, we've got Stu and Blake. How are we both today, this evening?
Doing well, doing real well, especially after moving forward in the cup.
Yeah, we're all up for the cup, as we'll get to it. Yeah, very well.
I was going to say, did you have FA Cup fever this weekend?
Yeah, I actually did. Yeah, and I've always loved the cup. You know, I think that it's rather unfortunate that some people have sort of fallen out of love with it. I know that it's not what it used to be, certainly, but still has a lot to offer, to be fair.
Yeah, I was, well, was it last year or the year before when we started being like kind of up for the cup team?
It was us two last year. And I think we did the third round game, which I cannot remember, but I think it was very much cemented doing the post Chorley podcast.
Yeah.
I think that very much defined us as the cup cast. Kids.
Yeah. Yeah, not like we're bench warmers, we're just rotational.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I was always the same. I was up until Captain Handbrake ruined it for us. And then that's why the Forest game, I didn't go to the Forest games. I thought, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of going to cup games, playing the reserves, Ruddy dropping one in, and it all being terrible. And I thought, no, I'm not doing it anymore. And then we went there and won 4-0. So I thought, well, more fool me. I've had my... I've been spanked good and proper with this one. So from then on, I thought, well, okay, he's coming. He's, like you said, he's here to win titles, which is amazing to hear. So, yeah, I mean, as soon as he said that, and then I thought, okay, he's going to take this seriously. I was well up for it. I mean, I woke up at 6:15 on Sunday morning, and I was up before the children in the house because we got cut fever and properly got hold of me. It was great.
You love to hear it. I mean, you mentioned something interesting about the Forest game, which I'll kind of touch on to later in terms of, I guess, the gulf of quality between Championship and Premier League. But under previous regimes, this might have been a game we'd have struggled against. And, all right, this isn't the same Sheffield United from a couple of years ago when they took the Premier League by surprise, and obviously they fell off a cliff last season. This was a potential banana skin if we weren't careful. And I think it kind of showed in the starting lineup how Bruno kind of kept faith with a lot of the team. Were you surprised to see more, that there'd be sort of more changes? Of course, sort of we had Marcel come in at centre half. Potentially you could have had Sanderson. You had Jordão on the bench. You had Luke Kundle, who's been in and around the squad this season as well. Do you think that's sort of a good indication, Stu, of Nagy's intent sort of from the off?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm going to put it in there. I thought he might play one of the Grasshopper kids and give them a go, but because he had said we'll play a team to win the game. And when managers have said that in the past, that doesn't mean, okay, we're going to put our first team in. We're going to play a mixture. And if they're not good enough, then that's their fault kind of thing. So to see him with what Fabio and Ruddy, really the only ones who you'd think wouldn't start in the Premier League under normal circumstances before this game, then it was superb. I mean, let's get it right. We barely beat Chorley last year. Chorley nearly beat us. And they had so many shots against us. And we were lucky with the strike from Vitinha to get us through in the end. So, like you said, cup sets have been all over the place this weekend. And, well, Man United being Villa. So, recording is not an upset because they're both
as bad as each other. Isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Both as dire and awful as each other. But, yeah, I saw that and I thought, right, I need another point, which I gladly did devour straight away.
Yeah, Blake, I guess sort of latched on from what Stu said then. Would you be happy if, let's say, that team started against Southampton this weekend, because you look on paper and it can compete in the top flight. I know there wasn't a huge amount of changes, but again, that there was definitely an opportunity for Bruno to make more changes if he'd have wanted to.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think the other thing of note, and something that we should keep in mind for Southampton as well, is that Raul just hasn't really been himself for the past few games. And I think especially after Fabio really proved himself in this game, especially, I mean, I think we'll get to that in a minute, but he did fantastic. And I'd be, honestly, I might be a little surprised if Jimenez starts against Southampton. I think it might be a good opportunity to sort of try and ignite a fire under him, to have him come on as a sub rather than start the game. But either way, yeah, it was a fantastic lineup to throw on out there. I mean, John Roddy, we've sort of established him as our sort of cup goalkeeper. It'll be interesting to see if we keep with that down the line. But it was a fantastic lineup.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I was, say, expecting us to win. I wasn't too worried about us before kickoff, and then for the first 10 minutes I very much was, and it did feel like particularly eight Nori had been on the lash on Saturday night, because I can't quite remember a that bad a start from a footballer in a match, and I really rate him as well. Did you guys get a little bit twitchy before, you know, we kind of calmed down after that first 10?
Yeah, he just kind of looked lost at sea, and I don't know. I've seen it in him a lot this season, especially when he comes into the opponent's half, where he just doesn't quite look like he has it. You know, it's just kind of weird. But yeah, he was. I mean, I would have almost said that he probably had money against Wolves in that game or something along those lines, because it just looked foolish for the first half, really. And then he sort of brought it back with the pass to Semedo, and we'll get to that. But yeah, it was a weird performance from him.
Now, Stu, I was going to say, as a man who likes a football cliche, small plug for the Football Clichés podcast, Ait Nouri did commit a cardinal sin, which is a cardinal sin of football in terms of passing across your own box. Where does that rank in, like, unwritten rules as a footballer? Because I think passing across your own box, despite the new, I was going to say, styles of play, still ranks it very high.
I think you just beat me to it. 10 years ago, you'd have been lynched and you'd been dropped for about 10 games if you did that. Yeah. Now it's just, well, it's just part and parcel of playing out from the back, I suppose. And there's a lot of things to get mad about modern football about, and silly little signs for children is one of them. It's just one of them things. To me, he looked exactly like a player who hasn't played much football in a month. And it took him longer than you'd expect to get up to speed again. But then once he did, I thought he was great.
Yeah. I mean, you move aside from that first 10 minutes of the game, and as I said at the start, we just showed that we are several levels above the Sheffield United side. Start with Podence's first goal. It completely calmed the nerves. It just set us off on exactly the right path. And to be honest, his performance over the whole game as well. What are your sort of thoughts on, we'll go for the first goal first, Stu.
Very similar to Jimenez against Everton, being ready to press and exploit a mistake, which it took a while to get this group of players into that kind of level of high pressing, because it's not really high pressing, is it? It's like pressing sometimes and then dropping off a bit more. But yeah, we're in the players in the right place at the right time, making correct decisions. And I thought Fabio looking from his little cameo at Man United last week, pretty much put himself for a start anyway, regardless if it was a cup game. Like Blake said earlier, I'd start him against Southampton, because why wouldn't you after that performance, regardless of the opponent? And absolute fair play to him. He perfect pass, perfectly weighted pass, and Podence didn't panic and just slotted it in. And it was weird, because I know there was Man City fans getting a bit of stick because they didn't celebrate the fourth goal against Swindon on Friday night. And you think, yeah, because why would you? You've just gone 4-1 up against Swindon Town. And it was kind of the same thing. Even though we started slowly, to me, this was like, okay, now let's calm down a bit. And it wasn't, oh, let's go all completely insane like we did on Monday for obvious reasons. It was weird to, because we just looked fine. Even though we weren't playing well, we just looked fine. And there's a kind of calmness about this side now that, I don't know if it's just me and me being all zen in 2022 or whatever, but I didn't expect to score, but I didn't expect to concede. And
yeah,
to just get Pedence of all people as well, who needed a goal, like a lot of people did, or we'll come on to. So pleased for the kid, because he's had it rough.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've always been a big fan of him, and I didn't quite realise how few goals he'd scored.
Yeah.
Like in the last kind of year, I kind of can't quite equate it. And I think I must have said it. I can't remember if I was on with one of you when I sort of said it. I think with Podence, it's just a case of keeping him fit. Mm. When he plays and he gets a couple of games under his belt, he's one of our best performers, whether it's on the left or through the middle. He creates chances. You can see why we bought him. But the biggest sticking point is he keeps getting little niggles which send him out for 6 weeks. But recently, pretty much ever since the Villa game, you could argue, he's probably been one of our best performers, certainly from an attacking point of view, like in terms of, you know, all our forward plays. He's definitely been, you know, our most creative outlet. And again, you know, a couple of goals today, yesterday, I think just showed it. And I'm like, yeah, it's against less opposition, but he's getting in those positions, which we haven't done an awful lot of. And, you know, I'm quite enjoying him playing as almost this, you know, almost a second striker, isn't he? At times. Rather than sort of hanging out on the left or whatever, he's probably getting in, you know, really challenging areas.
Yeah, there's no surprise that giving him license has kind of unlocked him a bit more. He ain't the kind of person you want to fit, like you said, stick him on the left and make him stay there.
It's very Danny Murphy, early 2000s.
I think that kind of goes for a lot of the team as well, because you saw it in parts where when Semedo goes wandering off and Neves kind of drops back in and they all cover for each other. And I think that's probably been one of the plus points of the whole season so far, where the improved players have had license to do what they want and not stuck rigidly to a disciplined formation as we've had in the past. And for someone like him, I mean, it's working wonders. I mean, the little Cruyff, would he be doing Cruyff turns last season? No, he'd probably been dropped.
Or if he'd have done, he probably wouldn't have pulled them off, is what I'd say. He'd have done the Cruyff turn, but then it wouldn't have gone anywhere. And I think that's the difference. That, all right, the game opened up, Sheffield United tired, but I mean, I'm skipping forward to the second goal because it kind of links into it, but I'm going to sound so reductionary here. That's my word of the day, I think, I'm going to go for. But you can't score goals unless you get players forward. And it was a big thing under Nuno, particularly second half of last season, where we get like one player in the box and it will be William Jose. And you're like, oh, fucking great. But you see time and time again this season that, particularly actually in the last, over December, to be fair, the more and more players get into the box, whether it's Neves, Moutinho, the fullbacks are doing it more, that, you know, and the forward line are all kind of shifting in to get into goal scoring positions. And I mean, that second goal, surely it's got to be like one of the goals of the round in terms of the overall play, where the ball started, how it flowed through the back, how, you know, Goody made a great point on his Molyneux Musings Twitter account in terms of the space between the centre halves, make it really difficult for Sheffield United to press. And again, it comes to Podence, who does a bit of magic. And then Nouri, again, doing what you're crying out for your wingbacks to do, just take that gamble and seeing where the space is and just going for it, because you're not going to lose out on anything. You're going to gain territory at the end of it. And then good old Nelson, wing-back assisted wing-backs, and we're all big fans of Semedo, aren't we? So seeing him score after a 70-yard run, we're having that, aren't we?
All I could think of was Kim. Just thinking of it, how overjoyed she'd be at that moment in time. I think a lot of that video that went around first of that goal with Semedo starting the move off in the first place, not knocking it back to Ruddy from the halfway line, and you think, that's deliberate. It looks deliberate because there's so many options there. You think, okay, he's going back to start something from the base again. And a lot of people commented, oh, it's large ball. And this is the kind of thing that when you look at the Benfica highlights from when he was there, and it is wing-backs bombing on, bodies in the box, not necessarily through strikers, but in a 4-4-2, and it was that kind of goal. You think, oh, this is what this is the dream we were sold at the start of the season. And you are right. It has been, and him himself in interviews has said, we just work on attacking all the time. We don't work on defending. They just know what to do with that. We always work on attacking, and the players have started saying it now as well. And it's coming to the forefront now, and you can see it with your own eyes.
And yeah, I will say, it must be so liberating for those wingbacks to have the back line that we do, because it just allows you to feel so confident in moving forward, moving into the box, and you know that they're going to be able to if there's a break or a counterattack or what have you, that everybody's just going to get right back in their positions. We'll deal with it, and then we move on. So, yeah.
No, I completely agree. And no, I think a lot of it is just, it's that beautiful mixture between it almost being system and all kind of quite methodical with creative expression. So that goal, I think, is sort of, Stu, you alludes to, that's kind of off the training ground. In terms of, they know what they're doing because they need to create the space. Where do they need to create the space? It's down the flanks. So eventually Podence drops really deep, which makes the space for Aitnori. Now, Aitnori needs to be brave, and he needs to have so much trust in Podence not to fuck it up, because if he does, then we're exposed at the back. It's 1-0 at the time. You know, that could go wrong, but you have to have faith in him to be able to create the space to knock the ball over the top. But he needs to have started that run before some of that parts have happened. And if he doesn't just go for it and just have that faith and confidence in his mate, you don't score that. Again, same on the other side, because Semedo's got to make a similar movement, hasn't he? But it only comes from Podence creating the space and having someone who's willing to go into it. Because, again, you're looping back. Last season, Podence might come short, come into the middle and try and get the ball, do a turn. But does Aitnori, does Aitnori go that far forward? Does he stay quite deep? And then we end up being quite restrictive and, you know, not kind of going anywhere. And it did feel like, again, I feel like I've said it four times already, so apologies. But it just sort of helped. It was against slightly lower opposition, and they weren't quite sharp enough to understand what was about to happen to them.
Yeah, it was. There were times, especially in the second half, when I was thinking, this is why I love that championship season so much, because it was so easy. Every week was like this. You just slaughter everyone.
Yeah, it's so easy to forget. And they're not a bad side, all right? They're missing Gibbs White, granted.
Well, but even still, they're mid-table. They're eighth. They have a couple games in hand. They could easily be a playoff contender this season.
Yeah, exactly. They're a good side. And, you know, they're playing like pretty poorly, but Premier League football last season. And again, you wrap it up, the third goal. Yeah, it's a mess up from the keeper, but it's still good work from Jimenez to, you know, get the ball back and retain it. And then Podence just keeping his cool.
Yeah, no, yeah. It was very composed. And, you know, Jimenez could have easily done something very stupid there because when you watch it back, like he doesn't just immediately decide to do something when the keeper drops it. He just sort of kind of calmly takes a moment, keeps the keeper from being able to sort of reach around and grab the ball, and then calmly passes it over to Potence, who slides it in just effortlessly. So, yeah, it was a great team effort, to be fair, even though it was sort of a keeper's mistake.
Yeah, like, when I've read the, I want to say, the Express and Star match report, because I'm lazy and I forget things more than anything else, but I'd seen the goal and then read it through. And I think if you hadn't seen the goal and you're just reading about it, it does describe that, you know, he knocks it past almost like an empty net with no goalkeeper in it. It's a mistake. And it almost doesn't, I feel I'm not criticizing the writing now I say it, but, you know, if you sort of break it down to, Jimenez disposed the goalkeeper, passed it to Podence to knock it into essentially an empty net. Whereas actually it's about 18 yards out with a couple of players around him. And again, when you're playing with confidence, it ain't half good. And, you know, I think all three of the goals, I think, just showed what we're about at the moment. And I think one of the only slight tidbits for me, and I get it because you've got players who are playing well, why do you want to disrupt it, is maybe you could have brought in someone like Jordão in earlier because he's been knocking about the bench. he has been waiting for so long to get that opportunity. But he did come on for a few minutes again. Again, do you see a chance for him in the next couple of weeks against potentially the fourth round, or do you still feel he is very much fourth choice and only if we really need it?
Well, I hope so. I mean, every time I watch him in the under-23s, I've always liked what I've seen of him. I've talked about him on here before, and then he got knackered, and then everything that happened after that, he's never really had a chance. And you see, we've probably spent about 5-6 million on him, or whatever the breakdown of that 20 million between him and Neto was. He's not a mug. He's not just here to make up the numbers. He was obviously bought for a reason in the first place, and there's loan inquiries about him, and you think, okay, give him, he's going to have a chance now, and then something else happens to him. And he just needs a bit of a break. I mean, he didn't really have time to do anything or do anything wrong, really, in the time he was on the pitch. So it's a bit harsh to judge him on that. But I'd give him another go. But I thought Kundal looked excellent in it. Yeah. The couple of touches he had, he was like, okay, this is just another one. It's a really good close control, plays a sensible ball, simple. Okay, yeah, we've bred another one here.
You can see why they're keeping around the first team.
It reminded me of a bit like the Phil Foden being the heir apparent of David Silva kind of thing at Man City, when they'd get criticised every year for not sending him out on loan. Mm-hmm. And it's for his development, it's better to be around this squad of players and whatever. And obviously, if he's around Martino and Neves every day, then that's going to be better than going to somewhere like Bournemouth or whatever. So I think in them two, I said the need for a centre midfielder is not that great anymore, because obviously it is. but I would give them more time if we have the chance to.
Yeah, I think seeing Jordão fit again, and I've got one thing I was going to query, just because I can't remember, and I feel like I've made this up. Was Jordão more highly rated than Neto when he came? That proportion of fee was more weighted towards Jordão, or I completely made that up? Because in my head, it's a bit like a Bakari and Sacco, and everyone was like, Bakari's one who's really rated here. And then, of course, he stank the shop up. But I can't work out if it's just because Jordão's always injured is why I'm associating with that.
To be fair, I remember it being that we all at least I thought that it was they were both just a nonsensical Mendes signing, and that they just would sort of hang around and not really do much. But I could be wrong on that.
When I read it, I think I might have been on the train. I was definitely in Whitby at the time. I wasn't around here, so I was kind of away from it all. You know, it's like, 3 hours away. But already, and I thought, well, I've heard of Neto, probably in 442 or whatever, or Mundial, one of the nerdy football magazines. Jordao had no clue, and I was like Blake. I thought, well, okay, this is grease my palms with silver kind of action again. And I thought, well, okay, this is obviously our little payback for him giving us Martinho for £5 million. And thought nothing of it. And so you look at all the highlight reels and there's nothing on him at all. But for some reason, I've got that memory as well. Maybe it's just a force thing that I don't know. I don't know where it's come from.
Maybe it's just his absence is making our hearts grow fonder. And we're just like, oh, he must be good. Because if he wasn't good, we've binned him off. So he must be good because otherwise, why would we keep having faith in him? And I'm pretty sure I slagged him off a couple of weeks ago on the podcast. No, I didn't slag him off. That's bad. But I sort of, you know, you look at his age and the amount of appearances he's had, it's worrying. You know, whether you put that down to injuries or whatever. So I do hope that actually between him and Kundal, they get more of a chance second half of the season, even if it's, you know, just more than that, a couple of minutes at the end, give him 20 minutes, give him half an hour, you know, because... You know, we'll go on to sort of who we thought did well and things like that. And I think across the board, everyone played all right. But, you know, that Dindonka still is not someone who imposes himself on games. And I think Gully said a couple of weeks back, he lacks conviction in everything he does, which isn't exactly something you want to hear as a footballer, whatever you play, is it?
I don't know what the point of him is. I don't know why he's here. He doesn't do anything ever. It's like there was one time when he nearly played us into trouble when he went into the back three, which, again, he's playing there at a duress more than anything else. It's not his position, is it? He's always been bad there. But he's always been bad in midfield for the last year as well. I'd completely forgot about him, to be honest. When we were talking about Kundal and Jordao, then I was thinking, okay, they're the two on the bench. Next in line between Neves and Martinho, because Ndonga doesn't do anything on that. He didn't do anything bad against Sheffield United, apart from when he went into the back five, but back three, whichever you want. But that's kind of the point. It was like, okay, do something, give us something to look for again. And is it, and famous Ndonga runs into the box where he constantly messes it up or heads it over the bar. We've had one of them this season, maybe a few weeks ago. I just don't get it. I don't know what's happened to him.
Yeah, no, it's such a strange phenomenon because I wouldn't even say he's bad. He's just sort of there. And he just sort of exists in his own little side of the pitch. And somehow just nothing happens. Like nothing ever happens with him. I don't get it. But I mean, well, it's not the worst thing in the world because, you know, it's not like he's conceding howlers all the time, but it's so weird.
Yeah, I'd be fascinated. And I've been trying to rack my brains in terms of either other football teams who have a player like that, or even other former Wolves teams who just have a player who has come. I used to be a really big fan of his, and I didn't mind him in a back three, to be fair. I could see how it worked. But over the last like year in particular, to be honest, year and a half, it kind of feels... You know, when he plays in for defence, he's like a midfielder playing in defence. When he plays in midfield, it's like a centre-half playing in midfield. And, you know, we're 3.5 years into him being at Wolves now, and I don't quite know what his best position is in this formation or in any formation. I don't quite know what it is any what he's kind of really bringing to the table as much anymore, apart from Harry's players. But that doesn't necessarily result in an end product, does it?
His best position's on the bench. I mean, let's be honest, he's a good utility player to have in an emergency. He's almost like a puncture repair kit. It'll do the job, but you can't keep it long term, can you? Like the spare tire that you have in the boot. It'll do the job for a little bit, but you can't rely on it long term. I don't get it either. I don't know what's happened. But he still plays for Belgium all the time, and he still plays exactly the same. That's baffling.
Yeah, but And I think we talked transfers last week on the show, and we'll talk about him a little bit around Traore later, but because he isn't first choice, it's kind of difficult to replace him because no one necessarily wants to join a team just to sit on the bench. And it's he's a very good third, fourth choice option in a couple of positions, which does make him valuable. But again, I can't remember last time I was like, you know what, he's playing really well here. And that's not great for a team who's done quite well this season. Again, who else kind of shone for you? We've talked Fabio a bit. Blake, anyone else?
No, I don't really think so. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what we do now that Sice is missing. And who would have thought last year that we'd be missing Sice of all players? Yeah. You know, to me, that's a big loss now, and I would have never thought that before. But anyways, it's going to be really interesting between him, Dendoncker, and Dendoncker, who's going to replace him. So, I mean, I don't know if Martial was taken off because of injury or just because Bruno wanted to see what it was like to have Dendoncker back there or what, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens in future with that and whether or not that sort of breaks apart the stone wall that we've had back there for these past few months.
I mean, I would go for, since Kilman played pretty much exactly the same on the left-hand side, which was always going to be a worry. Well, for me anyway, with him being player of the year in a certain position and then you're moving to accommodate someone else, it's never really a good idea, but he didn't do anything wrong and he was still as steady as anything else. Well, steady. And my mom said to me, is he half asleep? Because it was all very easy for him. He didn't have anything to do. I would go full, I'll just put him on the left and put Sanderson in and just be done with it, because that one mistake that Marcel made, where he redeemed himself, he went out for a corner, fine. He could have easily given a penalty away there. And I thought he was going to bring him down. This is inevitable now. As soon as he was the wrong side of him, I thought, oh, no. And we've already talked about Dendoncker in defence. Sanderson's been playing really well in the Championship for Birmingham. So I'll just throw him straight in there against Southampton. It's Southampton. I mean, come on. He's got to start somewhere. So I'd play Sanderson and solve the situation that way.
Yeah, I will note that from where I was in the South Bank, it did look like Martial was just unsure of what he was supposed to do as a centre back. You could tell it wasn't his normal position because he would almost think he was going to break up the pitch like a wing back. And then you'd go, oh, shoot, I'm a centre back. I shouldn't be doing this. And then he'd make some quick pass. And granted, they weren't mistakes, but you know, I don't know if that's really a position we can really rely on him to be present for, especially considering, you know, no offense to him, but his height will be an issue on crosses and corners and things like that. So, yeah. I'd probably go with Dendoncker at the minute, but I don't know.
And he hasn't played there for 2 years, well, 2.5 years when he's playing against Man City in the Champions League. So it's been a long time for him to play a certain position where he's been converted from one thing to another and then back again. And yeah, he did look like a little boy lost at times.
I thought,
pains me to say it in a way, but I thought Ruddy was really good.
Yeah.
I thought Ruddy was really commanding.
Like I say, Vian Sharp, fantastic.
Yeah. And there's so many, he made himself big for that shockingness from, which, I mean, I'll watch the highlights again early because I hadn't watched Match of the Day 2 yet. And the fake gold up front for them.
He
could have headed that. He could have met it earlier. He could have done anything possible with it, and for it to kind of trickle and then be saved on the line, it might have not even gone over the line anyway. It was that feeble. But Ruddy was there, and he did his job. And there's been times in the last 4 years where Ruddy hasn't done his job, and that's been a big problem that's fucked us up over and over again. So fair is fair. When he plays like that and he does his job properly, give him credit for it.
Yeah, you say 3-0, clean sheets plus goals. Really nothing to moan about, even though we always try really hard to. before we do man of the match, And I'm realizing time's ticking by, guys. Let's talk about asking for shirts. So, you might have seen it came across social media, but the young guy in the South Bank who had the, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it for people. He had a cardboard cut out of a shirt with Connor Cody on one side saying, "Connor, can I have your shirt, please?" But on the other side, he had one for, yeah, in some flag saying, "Raul, can I have your shirt, please?" Now, somebody made a very good point on the Fancast Twitter about this and said, shouldn't do extreme punishments, but a 5-year stadium ban should suffice. And yeah. Stu, how old are your kids again? Sorry.
10 and 4.
10 and 4. So your 10-year-old's probably sort of at a football watching age.
Yeah, I mean,
would you encourage that sort of behaviour? I'm genuinely curious now.
Well, you wouldn't be going with me if you did. It's not them, is it? This is the point. It's not them who's doing it. It's the parents who want the shirt. And this isn't a new thing. We saw this. Remember at Villa, Blake? We saw this at Villa. Someone had a reversible sign there. for Traore for God knows what reason. And then probably Raul the other. So having reversible signs is even worse than just having one on its own. First couple of times someone did it, fine. Okay, it's sweet, cute, whatever. But it's like an institution now. You have to see, if you're a kid, you have to take something. You have to put a begging sign up. Just fuck off. It's not gladiators. It's football. And if people just don't give in to them, this is the only thing that's going to stop it.
It does feel, yeah. You don't just have don't, to
or,
do it.
Or give it to someone who hasn't got a sign, and that'll show him.
Yeah.
And that's the only way that it'll stop. It's going to turn into a plague.
Because you don't, a footballer doesn't have to. I think it's always quite nice, actually, if a player does give away a shirt at the end of each game. Like, you know, I can't imagine them really reusing the shirts and things like that. But there is something I don't quite like, the emotional manipulation of it in the first place, because it is very much, I want you to see this. I need, like, and you say, it's not going to be driven by an 8-year-old.
No.
It ain't.
Spoken from personal experience, it's very American. And it's just one of those things that it especially doesn't belong in the South Bank, but it's it's just, it is a bit cringe, isn't it? It is one of those things where whenever you see a sign, it's just you almost feel sorry for, like, the kid. And as Stu said, it is the parents. It really is the parents. There's no doubt about that. It's like, This 10-year-old kid isn't writing perfectly in cursive, "Cody, can I have your shirt?" So it's just sad.
And there was a story on the it might have been the Totally Show last week about how a group of lads did it in Burnley, and they did it properly and had it in felt tip and everything and multiple pieces of card asking Ben Nee for his shirt, and they did it as a dare. And he gave it to him. He wasn't even a Burnley fan. But they just went to the game because you can get tickets to Burnley, of course.
Yeah.
And when you're doing things like that, another guy who was a mascot at Brentford a few years ago, if you're doing it for a piss take, then yeah, fine, okay. But no, just no.
Yeah. I was going to say, I might do a poll on this tomorrow if I can remember to do it. We'll just do first answer that comes to your head. What's worse, reversible signs asking for tops or a half and half scarf?
See, there's a time and place for them scarves, and for, like, European games as a memento, I can kind of get it in a knockout round, maybe, because it's a one-off for you in a different country in a different place, whatever. But for Wolves Southampton on a Saturday afternoon, 3 o'clock in the Premier League in January, there's going to be them because there is every week. Why on earth would you get one of them? Unless you're an American coming over here and it's your first game, or it's going to be your only game for like 5 years or whatever, and you want a memento, then okay, I understand it from that point of view. But there's shitloads of them. There's not that many people who it's their first game every week. I don't know who has. Where do they go? Or do you put them up on the wall?
Yeah. Well, like Stu says, I have like one or two as a memento, but I would never wear them. I would never be seen with one. Like, I might eventually hang it up once I move out of this flat and into a house, but like, that would be it. So I think there is a context in which half and half scarves at least make some sense. But I don't know if there is a context where these signs of, oh, please, please, can I please have your shirt, are ever not cringe. It's just, I don't like it. I just do not like it.
Are we just old?
We are, eh?
No, it's the kids who are wrong.
Yeah, it does feel very much like, you know, angry middle-aged men and Blake getting angry at people younger than us. But we'll wrap up talking about Sheffield United. We're going to take a short break, guys. Afterwards, we're going to talk about the fourth round draw. I was going to say who it was against. I was like, well, I'll keep you on the hook. Most people already know. So we'll talk about the fourth round. We'll talk a bit about Troy and we'll do Twitter Corner. We'll be back right after this. Hi, it's Richard from Wolves Fancast here. Just interrupting today's show before we get back to some questionable opinions and opinionated questions to talk to you a little bit about our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. They are a design agency that put you and your business first, from web design, logo and branding design and marketing. If you have any marketing needs, get in touch with them to find out how they can help you get it right. They are over at pixelyetimedia.com. Now let's get back to a show where we can give you some really forced wordplay, niche cultural references, and maybe even a bit of football talk. Hello and welcome back. Wolves pretty much after full time, about half an hour later. The fourth round was drawn for the FA Cup. We have not home, so another home tie. I was going to say against Championship opposition, but that seems really cool to say. But you know,
they are,
yeah, still technically an all Premier League tie. Stu, we've already talked about how we are always up for the cup. A bit underwhelming as a draw, though.
How many years do we have to go through this? Every single time, get my little hopes up. There was four opportunities this time. Four places I've never been to ever. A lot of places there, a lot of clubs. I ain't been to it for a long time. I'd have even taken that. But then the next best thing is a home draw. And if it had been Norwich away would have been awful. At least it's at home. At least it's going to be 15 quid probably. It's more than likely going to be on a Saturday 3 o'clock. So you've got to be up for the cup at that point because they're shit. And we will beat them again. I know we're... And beat them away a few weeks ago, but then you make these circumstances and Wolves away from home at that point, blah, blah, blah. They're more than beatable. So I don't think even just a couple of changes, fine. Ruddy will play again. We all know that. And it's one of them. It's if we lose to Norwich, I'll be very pissed off. So exactly. Absolutely up for the cup.
Yeah, no, I think it's one of those ties that, and I don't want to jinx anything, but you really do look at it and think, okay, well, we're winning this one. In all seriousness, I don't see a way in which, if we actually try and if we actually put out our first 11, I don't see us losing, unless maybe there's something fluky in a penalty shootout or what have you. I just don't see it happening. So, yeah, I'm happy with it because I think it's probably one of the easiest ties we probably could have had because, to me, I think Norwich probably won't be as up for it, if we're being honest, although maybe they are. We don't know yet, but I don't know. I think it is what it is, and as Stu said, it's way better than having to go all the way out to Norwich. So I'll take it, you know. I would have been equally as disappointed if we had drawn like Kidderminster at home or something like that. Mm. And we were that close to having this amazing away day. And then we got to play at home again. So I don't mind it that much.
Yeah, I think there is almost like a perfect formula for what you want in a cup tie. And I think it depends on what stage it's at. And I think particularly third and fourth round, you just want something a bit different.
Yeah.
And, you know, I assume we're still going to play a pretty strong side. Again, I'm imagining it's going to be basically the same team we played against Sheffield United, but maybe you rest Neves on Moutinho, maybe Raul Silva, there's a potential swap there. And I assume Hoover was probably going to start yesterday if it wasn't for COVID. So, you know, yeah. pretty much usual rotation, I guess. But that should still be more than enough to beat this Norwich side. But it would have been nice to have seen us against, you say, maybe Kiddy would have been nice as a bit of a local one. Boreham Wood from a lower, you know, from, again, lower division side of things, or even someone like Luton, and just really mix it up again.
I really want to see Kenilworth Road before it's inevitably bulldozed into oblivion. So hopefully we'll draw them in something one day. But yeah, I don't know. These cup ties can be really special when you have these smaller teams going up against these big clubs. And, you know, speaking as an American, just sort of since we've talked about that, it's just something so different to me that I've never really experienced before. These almost tiny little middle clubs going up against the big boys. And every now and again, they somehow win it. So to me, it's a little disappointing not to be a part of that, at least not in the fifth or whatever we're in now, the fourth round, fifth round, fifth round, right? Yeah, I don't know, whatever round we're in. But, you know, there's always the next round, so we don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, and, like, I do sort of think that, like, it's not that appealing for a fan, for want of a better term. And, you know, we've seen the photos of the Albion at the weekend and stuff like that. And, you know, the attendance was a bit lower, I think, partly down to the amount of fans that Sheffield United bought as well. But actually, it's still a winnable tie. And it's a Premier League opposition who could, you know, let's say if Norwich drew Stoke, or say they drew Luton, they'd fancy their chances in those games. And that'd still be another Premier League team into the fifth round. So at least we're beating someone of a slightly higher caliber who would just be occupying a pace later on, rather than, you know, getting a Chelsea. I was going to say Chelsea or an Arsenal, but lol. Yeah, so I think from a fan's perspective, not that inspiring, not that exciting. But I guess from the Wolves perspective and, you know, from a competitive, you know, viewpoint, I don't think they're going to be too disappointed with, you know, playing the worst team in our division for a significant amount of time.
No. And I think of the attendance as well. At the end, 27,000 was superb for that. And the fact that it was all them. Because you got to remember, they had 4,500, sold what? 1,500 maybe? Okay. So that's why the quadrant upper was empty, because it was theirs and they didn't even sell the steeple lower. So for a near home area sellout against Sheffield United on a Sunday, it was brilliant effort from everyone. And you think if it's Saturday 3 o'clock, you'd think you're gonna be around about 25-26 again, which price it right and they will come.
Yeah, and yeah, for everything I sort of say about it not being that inspiring, it's still against a half decent opposition, and we're pretty sure that it's not going to be a poor team either. So if it is still, like, you know, I've seen it was a lot of people's first time they're taking their kids to a game, a lot of people who can't always get tickets, and actually it's still an opportunity for fans who don't have that access via season tickets, which are in huge demand, to still go to games. And I think, you know, I've seen a couple of things online about, you know, phrase day trippers seems to have cropped up a lot recently, which I don't quite know how I feel about it. Because, you know, it's hard to get tickets.
Day trippers don't exist in the cup games. That's Premier League leftovers who've got scav tickets off certain ticketing sites. That's day trippers, not cup games.
Yeah. So again, I think it's a really good opportunity for ones like that. It's, you know, it's almost certainly going to be at a boring time. I'll be gobsmacked if it has got a prime time viewing. Although judging by the TV schedules this weekend, they might go, ooh, all Premier League tie. Oh, tell me more about Norwich City and Wolves. So yeah, I think it'll still be a good opportunity from that perspective as well. There's not been a whole lot. I know Dan would have done the Dan's done preview show for the Norwich game where we talked a bit about transfers. The Adama stuff still isn't going away. He's got 18 months left on his contract. The talks have stalled. The Spurs rumours aren't really going away. I mean, if you want my honest opinion, I think a lot of what is happening now is being pushed via certain agents in terms of trying to manufacture a move. Stu, what's your whole take on the Adama stuff at the moment? Whether, you know, sell, how are you viewing it all? Break it down for me.
We bought him for 18. Okay. Has he improved in 4 years? No, he hasn't. Does he? I'm talking about numbers again. The assist thing is not his fault. Sometimes. Because if he lays it on a plate and people fuck up, that's not his fault, is it? But the fact that, and if you haven't checked it out, go and look at Football Appreciation on YouTube. Very, very good channel. Stats-based analysis and stuff. Mainly on Wolves. And he did a thing on there where he compared Traore's XG and his XG for assists, which I can't remember what those, with Trincao, who everyone hates for some reason. Trincao was better. In every metric, Trincao, better goals than he should have more assists as well. And you think, okay, well, Traore has been in this country for what, 6-7 years now with Middlesbrough and Villa as well. He hasn't improved at all. If we can get 20 million quid for him, it's ridiculous money. And yeah, I know, because people were talking, yeah, 50, 60, when he was at the height of his powers, when he was playing well every week, when he wasn't doing stupid things over and over again, 20 million seems a bit of a come down. But when you think of it logically, the guy doesn't want to stay past next summer. This contract's been on the table for 15 months, according to Tim Spears. They're not going to offer him any more, and why should they? Because he doesn't warrant... It's obviously going to be an improved deal anyway on what he's on now. He wants to be a top earner at this club. He doesn't deserve to be. It's not just me hating him. He doesn't deserve to be a top earner at this club. Not one of the top anyway, because his output doesn't deserve it. Yeah, he runs past people and he can take people on. And there was a moment in the second half where he beat a bit four, then got hacked down, which was the best moment of the game for him. But then that's all well and good. But then the other side of his game, where he misses an absolute sitter again from just inside the penalty area, which just blazes over, that again, no one talks about. It's not good enough. It's just not good enough anymore. And the fact that we have a chance now to get rid of him, we've got other players around. Neto's coming back. We don't know what condition he's going to be in. But we got a chance now of getting some money for him. To me, on Sunday, he didn't look interested in large part of that game. He didn't look arsed. And I think, well, come on, mate. You got to put yourself in the shop window at least, like he did in the first three games when he was amazing and then the transfer window closed and he was shit again. Is that a conspiracy theory? No, it's because it's fact. And it's not. It's human nature, of course, it is that you want to, if you want to move somewhere, you want to get a pay rise, you're gonna put yourself out more. To me, on Sunday, he was one of the worst players on our team against a mid-table championship side. I'm not picking on him. It's just how it was. And I know Dan said as well, and we put it out on Twitter, would you rather keep him and take the hit on him if we get into Europe? But he's not doing anything anyway. He's had three games this season where he's made a real impact. Villa, again, fair. He's him making a pest of himself, putting himself about. But then it's all fits and starts, and it's for 20 million quid when we've got no money at all for whatever reason that is. They don't want to give us money. Fine. We have to create our own money. We're not going to get anything that anywhere near that in the summer. We're just not. So for me, if they're offering 20 million, no pissing about with other people involved, flat out 20 million quid in money, in cold hard cash, not NFTs or any crypto bollocks.
Can you imagine actual
money, take it and run. Just let's just get the whole thing over and done with, and then we can all move on. So this argument don't come up every week.
So Blake, my question to you is a slightly different one, but do you think, I don't necessarily agree fully with Stu, but I get his opinion. Do you think there's a reticence to sell Trial Ray because of his potential impact, even though after 3.5 years, we're still yet to see it as a football club? And do you think that's kind of holding them back, that there is almost that, I don't know, ego's a bit of a strong word, but thinking, you know what, if we can get him, you know, 10 goals, 10 assists in a season, then he'll be worth it, and we think we can do it. But do you think we're kind of at a tipping point now?
It's a tough call. I'm glad that I'm not the one making it. And
I wish I was.
I think the question that I find myself asking is, are we better off without him? And I'm not convinced, as bad as he is, and I don't necessarily know if bad is even the word, as not up to his potential as he is, are we worse off with him? Are we better off without him? And I don't think the answer to any of those questions is no. So personally, I don't know what the money situation is with Fosun. I don't know if they want to break even with Adam or not. If they want to break even with them, I would say sell now. If they're willing to take the hit, then I think that you just keep him around for the next few months, see what he does, see if he improves. Because I don't think that, yeah, sure, Neto's coming back and everything, but it's not as if our wing situation is fully figured out and we're just never going to play Adama again. I think Adama makes an unbelievable impression off the bench, even when he isn't playing particularly well, even when he is quote unquote bad. So I just think that if we want to make any money off of him, then yes, now is the time to sell. But I'm not sure, I'm not convinced that if football is really what's on our minds, that selling him now is the best decision.
Yeah, I think you've split it up actually in really good sort of terms. You've got a finance perspective and a footballing basis. Now, I'm of the opinion, if you've got a player of 18 months left on a contract, a decision needed to have been made a month ago in terms of what you're doing with him. If he hasn't signed a contract by January, then you need to probably move him on, just because it's a rate of diminishing returns then. And you look at almost the stats and the numbers of, you know, what players are valued at almost 18 months left on a contract to a season. And that gives the player so much leverage into other clubs as well, and the agent. And, you know, let's not forget who his agent is, to actually lower that price down. And I think if you wait until the summer, I struggle to see if you break even, as it were. Now, I think if you're really saying break even, it's 25 million because you include your wages. If I'm being really shitty, which I am, you know me, I'll definitely include everything, you know, all the spare boots he's brought home, all the shirts he's given into the crowd, you know, we'll all tab it up at the end. But I think if you've got a player of 18 months left on his contract, if he isn't signing it, sell him. Because we are starting to move to the world of, you know, it's a very NFL influence, but free agency players, because they can garner more money off clubs. Now, I'm a Wolves fan. I'm not an Adama Traore fan. My interest is in Wolves making and being a good football club. It is not in seeing Adama Traore earn as much as he can and earn his bag, as they'd say in America. So from that point of view, I'd sell him, because we're not good. We get, you know, 6 months down the line, I already kind of shared my viewpoints on the upcoming transfer windows with my tin hat, but it's all going to go a bit, or, you know, a bit funny in the next couple of windows anyway, because of the World Cup. And if Traore is really serious about playing for Spain in the World Cup, he needs to be playing regularly. He needs to be having that, you know, he still needs that game time at a good club. From a football perspective, that's a much harder one for me, because I still don't quite know where I stand on him. Are we a better team with him or without him? I think if you look at our wins this season, he's
not been there.
Yeah, you know, it's so tricky. And of course, you know, if we ever get 20 odd million for him, can we invest it? Can we get a new winger in? Or would it be a case of, actually, you know, we can get somebody in on loan, or we have faith in a Trincão and Podence until mid-February, then we get Hwang back, then we get, you know, potentially Neto coming back. Do you push someone like Semedo a little bit further forward, or like Nori further forward? Do you play Kundal? Do you switch formation and go Silva and Jimenez up front with Podence behind? You know, there's a whole other myriad of stuff, whether you kind of invest the money now or later. But the more time ticks on, that I'm kind of shifting towards we sell him, just from a money point of view, because I think we could argue whether he is a good footballer until the cows come home, really, because he brings something, but not he it's brings something to the table, but it ain't a meal.
Yeah, it's like that vinegar thing that you get with special bread. No one knows what it actually is, or why it's nice, but it is. And he's a sideshow. This is the problem. This is the problem. He's more of a sideshow than an effect. Thing is, everyone else, like we mentioned earlier about players who've improved under Bruno Lage this season already. When you look at Neves revitalised, Moutinho looking 28, 35 or whatever he is. Semedo pushed on. Aounouri again, massive improvement. Kilman, obviously King Kilman was always there. He just needed to be unravelled for the world. Cody, steady. Everyone in that first team has improved massively. Apart from Adama Traore again. And my main problem with him is his finishing, and it's fucking awful. it's awful, and no one can even, the biggest Traore fan in the world can say to me that that's going to get better, because it's not. Not at his age, he just can't shoot, and we've seen him score brilliant. Everyone's like, oh, the Man City, the two goals of Man City. Yeah, fine. How many goals has he got in 4 years? Is it four? Five? It's outrageous how shit he is at shooting. And there's been people like this whole Spurs project of playing him in a wing back. If he was switched on and he could defend, all for that. Well, we tried it and it's worked a couple of times. I don't think he's good enough now still to be playing in a front three, because his end product from a finishing point of view, it's shocking, and it just is. It's shocking, and it's been the case over and over again this season for us. And we'd be, how many more points would we have if he hadn't fucked up so many times from a finishing point of view, not from assist, from a finishing point of view? And it just baffles me. He's the most baffling, confusing player I've ever seen in my entire life anywhere, because you want to love him. And I If he signed that contract and he's here for another 3 years, you think, okay, Bruno might be able to get something out of him. Something might happen. It probably won't, but it might. But then you got, okay, he's got time to work with him. And I wouldn't necessarily be completely against that, but at least he's committing then. He's committing his future. And at the minute, like you said, Rich, he's pissing about. He's got an offer there that so many players would dream of, you'd think. And he thinks he's better than that. And if he ain't signed by the end of the week, then fuck him off.
Yeah. Interestingly, your main gripe against him is goals. That's not actually my biggest gripe against him. It's his positioning. And it's the... So it only sprung to mind when you were talking about it. The goal on the second goal and Semedo's run. I don't see Traore making that run.
No.
And that's what you need from him, because he relies so much on this pace, but he doesn't necessarily utilize it in the way you want him to. And because of it and how he plays and how he dribbles with the ball, and it's magical to watch in full flow, it kind of shifts how we play as a team. And if he could get that part to his game where, you know, you point out that in terms of goals, it's 7 goals he's got in 120 games, I think it is. Something like that. I think I had a quick look. 121 games in the league. It's 1 in 15 he averages, because he's got a couple in cups as well. So it's 152 games for Wolves and 10 goals.
So Jody Craddock has still scored more than goals for Wolves than Traore. Just to put that out, that's still the case.
So it's ones against Man City. They both happened exactly the same way. My thing was that all he had to do was pass it into the net. Really simple, really calm. You see it with Raheem Sterling. A lot of his goals just come from the same position. I don't need to be a fantastic finisher. Just get in a good position. Just get in a simple position where you can pass it in. But you need to get in that position. And he doesn't do that. And we need someone who can do that. That's what Podence brings. That's what Hwang brings. And that's the difference, because both of those have got the movement to create the space to then be manipulated by two other forward players. But they can also get into the position where the other one essentially creates the opportunity. And we're in an age, we're in a system where it is a team focus to get those movements, and just it's not fully clicking. And it's like we can keep dreaming, we can keep hoping it's gonna come off and pay, that he's gonna keep just pounding an opposition, that he keeps getting goals and assists and whatever. But we're 3.5 years in now, and we've never quite seen it. So
under two managers now as well.
Who are both coaches.
Yeah.
And I think I said this, me and Blake said it before, like, this is Nuno and Bruno have both been bought in because they improve players, because they are coaches, because they, you know, they look to improve what they have rather than just saying, well, I automatically need another player, and they haven't got it out of him.
Yeah. Attribute-wise, he's a Champions League player, 100%. Physically, superb. He's got everything going for him. But his decision-making and his football brain, he's like League Two at times. He's just not there. And I think that's why the wing-back project failed so many times, because he's not switched on. It's like a proper slagging off again. And he seems like a nice guy as well, which makes it hard, because
I know he's lovely.
If he was like Greg Halford, who we all hate anyway, regardless of how shit he was, then it'd be fine. But it's just, he's not, like we said, when we said before, he's not got a football brain. He's not clever enough. From a football point of view, he's not. It's a fact. He's just not. He hasn't got it. And at his age, it would have clicked by now.
You say he's 25, about to turn 26. And part of me thinks, you know, let's see if Antonio Conte can rattle it out of him. And but as Blake said, are we improving another side and detrimenting ourselves and things like that? We're going to go around. Only time's going to tell, isn't it? In terms of can he do it at another club at this level?
I hope he goes back. In an ideal world, he'd go back to Barcelona and he'd win Ballon d'Or for Barcelona. That'd be, in an ideal world, that'd happen. Then we could all be happy for him. But it's not going to happen, is it?
Well, tell you what, let's wrap up Traore chat for there. Traore talk, even. Good to miss the alliteration there. Should we do a bit of Twitter corner to round off today's show? Because I realise we've basically done a 10-minute rant on Traore. And I say, for someone who can bring so much joy to you on a football pitch as well. But I say, I think we're at a bit of a crossroads with him, especially with the contract, which I think is the big thing over hanging a lot of the situation for a lot of fans, particularly me. So let's do some Twitter corner. I don't think there's any Traore ones in there, so fingers crossed, guys. Right, up first, should we do a fun one first?
Go
for it. Let me see if I can find the fun one. It's from David Evans, dear founder of the podcast. I'm literally just flicking through all the questions now. There we go. So if you could bend time to your will, which, Dave, you know I can, what would be the Wolves equivalent of Tom Holland, Andrew Garfield and Toby Maguire all appearing on screen at the same time, but on the Molyneux turf?
Well, you think that our best player at the minute, one of our best players at the minute, Neves. So then you think about who's our best midfielder in 2001-2, Paul Ince, maybe? So, and then do the same for when Garfield was there, so that's 2014. So you're thinking a midfield of Neves, Ince and Dave Edwards?
See, I had in my head very similar. I had Neves in my head and I was thinking culture. Suave. Rocket of a foot. And I went Milias.
Mm.
And then I was really annoyed because I thought of my third one in Fernando Gomez. But then it didn't quite work with Milias and the time.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking that the other idea was, what was my other one? I've completely blanked on it now. It's a real shame we haven't had three Korean players. we are like, if we'd have got Sun Hyung Min before Bayer Leverkusen or whatever, that would have been a nice one, I think, as well. I think you could do it with goalkeepers quite easily, though. That's one of the few areas.
Yeah.
Ikeme would be a kind of cool throwback to see kind of walk onto the pitch, I think.
Yeah, well, Matt Murray, yeah. Ikeme and Saar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think those would be my three, Dave, to be fair. I think that works quite nicely. One for Blake. If a significant offer came in for Raul this month, would you consider selling? We are basing this off like a game and a bit for Silva. It feels like slightly. he must be fucking great now.
If we had someone lined up for Jimenez, then yeah, I would take someone. I would take that offer. I just... Don't get me wrong, I love Jimenez for who he is and what he's done for this club, but are his best days behind him? I think so. I'm not convinced that he's ever going to fully recover from this. I'm not convinced that he's ever going to be the player that he once was. And we were kind of talking about financially with Traore, like getting your money back. And I think this is sort of a situation where if we want to make money off Jimenez, now might be the only time we get an opportunity to, because I love Jimenez and I would love for him to have that sort of fairy tale come back to form and he's one of the best strikers in England again, but I just don't see it happening. Now, I don't think you could sell him right now because we don't really have anybody up front to begin with. So we would have to have someone ready to sign to replace him. And knowing Fosun, there's no chance that that's going to be the case. So from a realistic standpoint, I don't think there's any chance that we're selling him. But if the stars aligned, then yeah, I think I would take a considerable offer. If it was considerable, you know, if it was a fair offer, if it was worth our time, then yeah, I think I would take it.
Okay, interesting. Right, flashback over to Stu then. Do you think Ryan Giles and Deion Sanderson will be here just for January, or do you think, and do you think they'll get loaned out again, or do you think we've got them for the rest of the season? Now that's from Stuart Jones.
I think they'll probably go back out on loan, and I hope not. But I hope they both have enough time and they get a chance to show what they can do. I mean, when we were linked with certain other Cardiff players in the summer, and I thought, okay. But then it kind of brewed up again and up again. And I mentioned bringing Ryan Giles back because he was as assists and everything at the time, and obviously got lambasted for it because he was only the Championship. Same with Sanderson when he was man of the match every single week for Sunderland. Again, that was only League One. And look what happened. Sanderson went to play. He'd already played in the Championship at that point anyway. And now he's going to step up again. Perfectly fine performances for Birmingham. So at some point, you got to have to just... Like Kilman had a chance. He went from maiden to the Premier League via a few minutes in Europe. You've got to start somewhere. You've got to roll the dice eventually. And hopefully, I hope that they both get a chance to prove what they can do. But realistically, they'll probably be back out somewhere else, sadly.
Mm. All right. Bradders 77 asks, could Raul and Fabio work as a front pairing, or do you think it's very much either or / one up front? Personally, I like the idea of it because two strikers, more chance of scoring goals, but without a third one really pushing from the bench, unless Patrick Catrone comes back, then I don't see it happening. Do you guys?
I mean, we rely on wingers so much now that I just think that having a front two is a bit obstructive, you know? Granted, I'm not opposed to having four players up there, considering we've only scored 14 goals the whole season. But, you know, I just think that realistically we've been defending so well, and I think our formation has done us really, really well. As great as I think it could be, I just don't trust it enough to say, yeah, let's do it.
I mean, how can you even, unless you went 3-5-2, because we're going to play with a back three anyway, regardless.
And I'm thinking 3-5-2, Podence.
Exactly what I was going to say. If you're playing Podence there and giving just free realm to do what he wants, if we got wing backs playing like they did for the second goal, it could work brilliantly. It could be very. It could be like Bull and Keane, regen Bull and Keane.
But is Podence going to work playing that sort of wing back role? I'm not convinced.
No. Podence in the hole.
Oh, in the hole. Got it. Yeah, got it.
He doesn't have to stay there. He could go wherever he wants. But he's good enough to do that, and that then solves the problem if Traore is gone. That Aneto doesn't come back to be the player that he is, and then we've got Trincao being Trincao. Who knows? He could flourish there. Then you got two. It could work. I mean, it's worth a try at least.
I was gonna say a weird one. We'll all come in. I was gonna be a bit like nah, but I think it's got a bit of potential. To be fair, again, similar lines around Fabio Silva from Team Jammer. Fabio Silva and Podence should start more games. They're like a dynamic duo up top. I do quite like when Podence does play up front because, all right, to be fair, Silva's quite tall, Raul's quite tall, but you immediately go big man, little man. And I can't get my head away from it, can you, Stu? Like in terms of like classic 90s football, that if you're playing two up front, you have to have that height difference. It doesn't work otherwise. You can't have two big men.
No.
Which kind of is the opposite of what we've just been talking about, I appreciate. So, you know, we're prisoners of the moment. So we're on this at the moment.
Heskey and Owen.
Yeah.
Nice.
Quinn and Phillips.
Yeah. I mean, Sutton and Shearer, they were about similar heights. So
yeah.
That's the Fabio and Raul.
Where does Sheringham? Sheringham, Sheringham, the SAS, but Sheringham liked to drop deep. I didn't really see, he was tall, but he wasn't imposing. I always sort of saw him more as a bit of a playmaker.
He's over 6 foot, are you telling Sheringham?
Yeah, he was big, yeah. He wasn't small. But yeah. Robbie Keane and Berbatov. Is it because Robbie Keane's stuck in my head at this point? But yeah, again, I do quite like it up front, and particularly because of how Podence moves and stuff like that, him being up front with someone who's got a bit more physicality, I am enjoying a lot of the moment. Right, last question. I'm deciding to take this, guys, in a bit of a fun way. So the question's from someone. That's what it's got as his Twitter name, by the way, guys. If Adama left in January, what would your drink of choice be at the party? Now, I don't know what the tone of that is or whatever, so I'm just going to say it's only leaving do. So we're on a night. He's been here for 3.5 years. We've all got to know him. You know, he chips in with the, you know, Christmas tips and whatever. So we're on a leaving do for him. We're going up. I don't know. Where should we go on this night out?
Gifford.
We've gone Gifford. What are you going to drink with him? Bear in mind, it's his night and you're taking him to the Gifford.
Well, this is what you could have won, kind of thing. It has to be something special. Like,
I was going to say, here's me. I was going to say Red Bull. Then I could try and be as fast as him.
Yeah, I'm thinking, what did I... Green chartreuse. I heard that for years. That's you can find it. That's exceptional liqueur. But yeah, I'll say that. Because it's different. You don't really know exactly what it is or what it's for. But it's really good in small doses. Very much like Traore.
With a strong finish or?
For a very strong finish. Unlike Traore.
Blake, how about you? What are you having on your nights and your leaving party?
Jaeger bombs would be a very Adama Traore drink.
Yeah.
But I think whiskey, because you don't really know why you like it. It packs a massive punch, but in the end, it's just total shit, and you know it is. So there you have it.
He's the Jack Daniels of the footballing world. Is that what we're going for?
I guess it is, yeah.
Yeah. Well, on that bombshell, we're going to wrap up recording and the show for today. Big thanks to everyone who's listened. We'll be back to preview the aforementioned Southampton game this weekend. Big shout outs to 90 Min Football Family Network of podcasts and to our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. Go check them out at pixelyetimedia.com. What other admin? Our social media. I'm clicking, going right through it today. So make sure you keep up to Wolf's Fancast for all your lols and trolls and bad photoshops. We're at Wolf's Fancast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And until next time, it's goodbye from Stu.
You know, we should curse Fabio Silva with different haircuts every single week and not delete them this time. Keep them up for everyone to see. Because it clearly works wonders.
That was the motivation he needed, and that's all we're going to say on it.
Yes. See you later, guys. Try.
It's goodbye from Blake.
See you, everybody.
And it's goodbye from me. See you next time.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?